Child, touch my soul with your cries, and the music will know what we found.
Welcome back to the Bruce Salen Show, A Dad's Point of View, and thank you, Elvis, for that wonderful song, and thank you, Neil Diamond, for writing it. It is time to bring back the incredible Sherrilyn Laban for some political talk, and I swore I'd never do it publicly, but be careful what you say. Never say never. Sherrilyn Harley Laban is co-chairman of the Project 21 National Advisory Board. Her resume would take up the whole show, and I don't want to lose time with her, so I'm just going to welcome Sherrilyn to the show.
Hey, Bruce, great to be with you, as always.
Well, I so look forward to our chats every Thursday, and for those that listen on the weekends, that means Saturday or Sunday to them. So I'll start off right out the gate. Am I a racist because I'm a white guy talking about race and talking about black people? And are you even offended that I use black versus African-American, given that you are a woman of color?
No, I'm not, and that's actually a couple of things I want to say. No, I think that people should be welcome to talk about race issues. And the reason why they're afraid to talk about race issues is because the PC police has got, you know, white liberal guilt at work, and people are afraid to talk about race. Second of all, black is the word that should be used instead of this African-American. We're all Americans. And someone in the 60s came up with this phrase of African-Americans, I guess apparently to A, make black people feel better about themselves, and B, again, once again, to help with white liberal guilt. I think we just need to say black.
Well, I agree with you, but let's go back further. The NAACP, what does that stand for? Colored people.
Right.
What is wrong with colored?
I don't know, because, you know, this is what we are. We're colored people. It's Asians. It is people
I don't even understand.
Indian descent. I mean, people with a little bit of melanin, I guess.
Yeah.
What's wrong with using that phrase?
And if I called you colored, I mean, not you, because I know you're not politically correct, and you know me, and you know where I come from, and you know what my heart. But if I called the average African-American black person, or whatever the term is, colored, I would get slammed. Not literally necessarily, but verbally. I was in with one of the girls that I wrote about in the column. I went with her to a tattoo parlor, and there was a young black guy there, and we started engaging in a conversation, and I made a reference to him being black, and he looked at me. He was definitely in his 20s, and he said, "I'm African-American," with a little bit of irritation. And I then used that opportunity to engage him in a discussion about the term. And by the time we were done, he and I were absolute buddies. But the moment I said black, he was a little bit judgmental about me. Once we spoke further, we were cool. But amazing. Is there anything in my column that you think is racist or inappropriate?
Not at all. No, I don't have a problem with it at all.
I mean, I don't really do much talk about race other than reflect on these two girls that I met, the difference in their backgrounds. They happen to be black. And so it made me, ironically, I did feel a little bit of white liberal guilt, although I'm not a liberal. Not other than the fact that I had the privilege of a loving mother and father, and neither of them did. And they came from these very fractured and large and diverse, I don't mean diverse in ethnicity, but diverse in who's mom and who's a dad and who's a step and who's not. The one gal was the daughter of a former NFL player who had fathered 10 children with 7 or 8 different women. She used the word baby daddy or daddy baby or whatever it is all the time. She lives in a home with 5 children. No two of which have the same parent. None of the parents of any of the kids in her extended family have ever been married.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what type of example that this is setting for this young woman and her siblings. I mean, this just is not the way to raise children. Now, again, I'm not trying to be judgmental. We see this in a lot of communities, not black, not just black, but across the wide spectrum, white, Hispanic, you name it. All communities have this.
Okay, but let's get politically incorrect out really big time. There is a crisis in the black family. The black father is more absent, correct me if I'm wrong, than in any other group.
You know, I haven't seen the statistics on it, but from my purview, I do think it is a pervasive problem.
Okay, whether it's the biggest group or not, it's a problem. Let's just leave it
it's
that.
It's a big, pervasive problem.
So why and how did that happen?
Well, if you listen to the historians, it really started back in slavery, okay? It started back in slavery because when blacks were brought here in chains off the boats, how the plantation was able to survive is that you broke up the family, right? You broke up families because if there was a man present, it is unlikely or at least the slave master would get some sort of resistance from a white man taking his wife, or also the man being around would not want his wife being beaten or abused in any way. And you can see this, Bruce, this exists in cultures around the world. Whenever you have war, what's the first thing they do? They take away the man.
Or they rape all the women. Or they rape all the women.
But first you got to get rid of the men in order to rape all the women. Okay?
Okay, but wait. Let's go forward, because we don't have a lot of time, to the 50s. When the black family unit was incredibly strong, church going was huge in the black family. And that was Jim Crow days. So in the hardest times practically in our country, pre-civil rights and during the civil rights, the black family unit was probably the strongest of any group.
And that was after slavery, right?
Right.
You have families now being reunified. You have men now in the homes. Right?
Right.
And then you have a dad at the table, mom, and the children. Now what happens, again, if you want to, according to the historians, what happens is the development of the welfare state. And what happens during the development of the welfare state and welfare and food stamps and all that good stuff is that in order to get aid, you need to not have a man present in the home.
It's like it's so comical. I know that's how it happened. And,
right?
You know, that was what was Lyndon Johnson's great big program?
The Great Society.
Yeah.
This Great Society.
Broke up families.
Broke up families because if you want, the more children you have,
the more you get,
but the man can't be in the house.
And kick out the man. And by the way, this is a problem in all groups, not just black families.
Yes, exactly.
It may be worse in some black communities than others, but
there's plenty
of welfare white women, white moms that got sucked into this despicable cycle.
Exactly. And that's how it works, is that in order to get more aid, the man can't be in the house. And I mean, and what a perverted way of hoping that people will become self-sufficient, right? I mean, what a perverted way of not getting people there.
Okay, so
let's rely on the government.
Let's avoid politics like we always do and bring in our beloved president, who has doubled the number of recipients of food stamps.
Absolutely.
How and why is there any justification for that, and what is the consequence of that effort on his part, other than getting more people dependent on the government and therefore voting for him and or his party? Is that all?
Well, I think that what you said, exactly, other than, I don't think there's an other than, Bruce. You're growing a population of people who are becoming more and more dependent on the government. Do you remember during the campaign that video came out of the life of Julia?
Oh,
that
gosh.
That says it all. Julia, not once did we see a man present in her life.
And this was a white woman. Awesome.
That was so clear to me, is that Julia, not at one point in her life did you see a family, a man. And to me, that was a very clear way of appealing to women on this campaign, that it's okay if you never get married, because the government will become your daddy and the government will take care of you.
I would use the word pandering rather than appealing because that's what it felt like.
Well, that's exactly what it was.
All right, we're nearly out of time. We're nearly out of time, Cheryl. And you have two children. They're about to be 6 and 9. How
yes,
do you see the world going forward through the eyes of race and all that affecting them? Or how do they see it differently than maybe you did?
Well, I must tell you, despite, you know, how far we've come, the N-word is still being used in school. And I'll use this example.
You mean Negro?
No, I mean the other word.
I know, I'm kidding.
And my daughter, there has been an incident the past 8 weeks of the 8 and 9-year-old boys using pretty vulgar words.
But
which my daughter
knows. The black kids or the white kids?
No, my daughter goes to a private school, which is predominantly white.
And they're using
They're using the F word and the A word. And my daughter came to me and said, you need to call the principal. You know, I don't think this language is appropriate. She's right. She's 8 years old. And so I spoke to the principal a couple times and said, you know, this can't happen. So finally, my daughter was fed up last week. And she confronted these little boys at recess and said, you know, you guys really need to stop this. It's disrespectful, and I wish you'd stop using this language.
And so what did they say?
Little boy, of course, says, well, at least I'm not black.
What the heck does that have to do with it?
Exactly. And the other little boy says, well, at least I don't wear glasses. And yes, this is what my 8-year-old said to them. She said, well, at least I have sense.
How? God, is she your daughter or what?
She is my daughter.
I love it.
That is exactly what she said.
Oh, she is your daughter.
Exactly. And then I promptly emailed the principal one more time and said, you know, this is really has to stop.
If I had a nickel.
My daughter should not be confronting the boys on her own. And I expect that this is handled by today. And sure enough, the next day, the principal came and spoke to the third graders at lunchtime and said, you know, this is not acceptable. If you want to use that language at home, that's fine, but you can't use it here. And then those three offending boys, were taken to the principal's office for recess.
Good, good. Well
but
done.
But that is my daughter.
Boy,
she
I
said,
can't
at
wait.
Least I have sense.
I cannot wait to meet her. I can't wait. All right, we're out of time. Where can we find you?
Oh, your listeners, and thank you to your listeners, can find me on Twitter at Harley, H-A-R-L-E-Y, Levon, L-E-B as in boy, O-N.
Okie dokie. Once again, not enough time. I'm going to pre-record a show with you, a whole show, where we will take on a heavy-duty topic at some point in the future.
Would love to.
Thank you so much. And after these messages, we will talk about spiritual stuff with Pastor Drew Stamps.
The busy of living to worry about a thing called love. But when I see a mother's tenderness as she holds her young close to her breast, then I thank God this world's been blessed with a thing called love.